Welcome to the ODD Collective on Wolf Spirit Radio and everbeyond.info. Oppositional Defiant Disorder. Hosted by Luz Aguibena, Nancy L. Hopkins, and Cindy Evans. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Luz Aguirreveña with Wolf Spirit Radio and the ODD Collective. And I want to do what I always do today, which is to invite the spirit of my father, Pedro Aguirreveña, who was the first ODD person I met. And not only that, but he was actually, as he aged, he was a radiant senior. So, and today we have a very fascinating show because I want to share with everybody that I have been invited to an amazing project called Radiantly Senior. So, Radiantly Senior, think about that. Vanessa Wells, a friend of mine from Facebook, invited me to participate in a book that's going to have 1,800 words from 45 co-authors who are actually radiantly senior. I can't even begin to tell you how much I love the idea and the concept and how honored I am to be a part of it. And it's also, you know, something not only in terms of the content and the idea of Radiantly Senior, which is not only a book or a project, but it's a lifestyle, and it is a movement, and it is, you know, something that has to connect, you know, to reality in such an enormous way that, you know, there's so much to talk about. So I was invited by Vanessa. I am part of the project. We're inviting other radiantly senior women authors. The part that I was going to say that's so beautiful about this is regarding the platform, the publishing platform with Star Lafay. Star Lafay is the publisher. And the platform, it's a platform that basically invites everybody, whether, you know, she says that people approach her and say, I cannot write. And she says, well, you know, you can tell your story, can you? You know, so it's about telling the story, because the story is the most important thing, because that's the way we relate to each other, and we feel not so alone, and we start understanding, you know, that the experiences of others are so similar to ours in so many ways, and we can complement each other's experiences in a radiantly beautiful way. And Radiantly Senior, you know, in so many ways, it's kind of like a choice, right? So today we have Vanessa Wells here, who's the founder of Radiantly Senior, and Cindy Shippy Evans, my beautiful partner, who has been out for a little while, and she's doing incredible work with herself and her next project, her next personal development project, because, you know, Cindy wants to target the triggers, and I think that's a fantastic idea to work on the triggers, you know, the triggers that make you do things, because sometimes the triggers are coming from a different place. So that's kind of like what's been in the background with Cindy and a lot more. So I'm very excited today to talk about this. And I and JP, we haven't talked much lately, but you know, of course, JP, it's the ultimate, you know, how should I say, radiantly senior androgynous, right? The one that connects the yin and the yang in such a beautiful way. So I'm so honored that you're in this conversation too, as always, my brother. So Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And, you know, I was talking to you this morning because I always want to kind of dig into the origin of the ideas and the stories. And you know, the more I think about this, the more excited I am with the idea of Radiant the Senior. And I was asking you, you know, how did you come up with the idea? Because I really believe that so many of us are actually, you know, being and doing the Radiantly Senior without the name, right? Without the name. We're acting it, you know, and it's so beautiful to watch. So please tell me, you know, the origins, the root cause, how did it all start?
Luz, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, I'm sorry. I kind of have a little technical difficulty here.
So I'm going to mute now, and you can tell, you know, you can start telling us, you know, a little bit about how it all started.
Okay. Well, the concept of Radiantly Senior, it came from a time when I was searching for a name for a business that I was launching that had to do with life coaching individuals who were embarking on or close to embarking on an era in their life that, you know, our culture has tagged as, you know, our senior years. And up until that point, the script that had been pre-written for our lives, we found pretty engaging as we were growing up, and that was all well, but then we got to a stage called retirement or pre-retirement, and we realized that the world script for our lives was not that engaging anymore. And in fact, it led to certain boredom and death pretty quickly. And my intention for the business was to help people entering this kind of new era in their life, help them to rewrite the script that was laid before them at this stage in their lives, and for them to really live and design and create a life that they really wanted and always wanted to live. And as I began to engage myself in the business and work with people, I thought of this, the concept of Radiantly Senior, and it felt right and it fit. I realized that there was something more though that I wanted to accomplish with this concept. As I started working with people, I didn't just want to stay cooped up in my house all day coaching people about this. So I actually wanted to start a movement or a concept, as you said, regarding this. And about 2 days later, I made a post on one of the business Facebook pages that I belong to. A day later, I was contacted by this publisher, Starla Faye, out of the blue, about what I did with Radiantly Senior. And a day later, this project, Radiantly Senior, was born between the two of us. And that's pretty much how that all got started.
Wow. I love the thought process that goes through that, you know, because it really is what you're doing. It's really targeting your audience, the conversation you want to have with who, you know, with the seniors, yeah, as a senior, modeling Radiantly Senior, right?
Exactly, yes. Yes. So it pretty much all started with an idea, you know, with a desire to really hone in on this particular audience and the uncertainty of, you know, what was next for them, you know, in life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was, I wanted to ask, Cindy, I love you guys to comment on this idea, you know, whatever comes to mind, Cindy and JP, if you want. And then I wanted to go a little bit about the story, you know, about the previous conversation we were talking about, you know, the conversation about the relationship between pain and joy. You know, that yes. It's kind of like the theme of being radiantly senior. We have kind of, I think we all have somehow come out to some consensus at an implicit level sometimes. So, sure. Cindy, yes. Great to have you. We want to hear your voice.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
I think that it is a wonderful idea as far as having people talk about their experiences and really where they've progressed to. And there's so much tied into the concept of learning through pain, because obviously as we grow and mature, you know, we add to our life experiences, and you know, they're not always joyful. You know, life is a series of ups and downs. And, you know, I did really come across the idea a number of years ago that my best learning has always been because of pain that I've experienced. My best growth has always been because of that pain. And like I said, the older you get that, the more you begin to understand the whole concept. And once you understand how much beauty lies in suffering, you begin to grow and expand exponentially, because you seek out those experiences for growth, and you are free from the fear that the idea of pain often brings.
Yes, amen to that. We've been talking about this bridge between pain and, you know, the bridge between pain and joy, you know, as the example of the mother who bears a child with pain, which is a perfect example. And you know, Cindy, I love what you said, because it's exactly that. And it was so interesting, because I had this, oh my goodness, you guys will have, oh, somebody's talking too loud there. Anyway, sorry. The thing was that it was so interesting what happened, because, you know, Cindy and I have been posting and on the same page, you know, and talking about all this awakening and where we are at, you know, our soul purpose. And it's been like when we, you know, the whole thing about pain I don't know how it happens, but I know for a fact, as Cindy said, that, you know, the first huge pain in my life was when I was 10 years old, that I lost, you know, everything changed and broke to 1,000 pieces, and I could literally step out and see how this pain I was feeling was so profound, and at the same time there was this huge joy of expansion of, oh my God, the world, you know, oh my God, it's like such an expansion, and it's difficult to explain, right?
Yes.
So it was interesting because when I did, with Vanessa, you know, I remember a year ago, I think I talked to you, Cindy, and I want to tell this story because it all is so synchronized, right? So, Vanessa posted something about that, about the bridge between pain and joy. And I said, oh my God, I'm so glad you're talking about it, because every time somebody's talking about that, I go, please, you know, we should repost this every day so that we understand it, right? Like it goes second skin to us. And so I said to Vanessa that if she wanted to come to our radio program at the time, you know, and we couldn't coordinate for some reason at the time, you know. So when she wrote me, you know, about Radiantly Senior, I'm going, of course, that's so great. And then I'm seeing this connection, you know, with Radiantly Senior and pain and joy. And you know, I'm going, and by the way, we have a pending conversation about pain and joy that we never had, which is taking place right now, right?
Yes, yes, indeed. It is really the premise of this project with Radiantly Senior. I think the pain experience that you're talking about, because without it, none of these co-authors that are a part of this project will be the radiant sentinels and inspiring women that they are. They have all been through tons of pain, including myself. We are literally born into pain. We come into this world and we're immediately imprinted on on all sorts of levels, conscious, subconscious, superconscious. We're imprinted with, you know, the pains and the circumstances of our environment immediately. And we've actually begun to learn how to deal with it. Our learning is, okay, how do we deal and cope with this pain? And that's pretty much our first survival lesson. Just surviving and dealing with this pain. And then, you know, as we grow older, this pain has to, you know, we have to deal with it through an intellectual space and thinking about it and asking all the questions of, you know, why did this happen? Why did they do this to me? Why? And we never really quite figure out the whys as we're dealing with this. We're just continuously finding ways to cope with it and push it down and hide it and, you know, just kind of, most of us deal with it in an intellectual way. You know, we become very smart, very educated. Some of us deal with it in other ways. We become violent. But nevertheless, it's never really dealt with until at some point. And it's a different point for all of us. Like you just said, we have these moments where we realize that we are awakened and we have learned so much through this journey of pain. And it is quite the story. I mean, we all have different versions of the same story, but then we began to understand and look for the whys. And, you know, we learn the story of our parents and we learn the story of our grandparents. And, you know, it goes on and on throughout, you know, deep ancestry. And, so we intellectually figure out why, but that doesn't heal us. You know, it's good to know that, and that's the beginning, but that's not where the healing comes from. The healing comes from a deep, deep starting at the point of looking within and confronting the pain and feeling the deep, deep, deep pain for the first time, which can really send us through a tizzy, a whirlwind, you know, in the very beginning. But at that point, what we begin to learn then is learning to heal. And that journey can go in any number of directions, but we go from learning to cope with our pain to learning to heal. And that's what the story of these 45 women in Radiant Three Senior is about. It's their journey from the pain to their healing, and how they have rewritten a script for their lives that they want to live, that they want to express. And the leaps of faith that each and every one of them at some point in their lives had to take out of an old paradigm in order to have what they're having now. Are you there, Luz?
Ah, sorry.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I was muted. I have a new Skype. It's driving me crazy. I don't understand it. It's really difficult. Anyway, bear with me with that. So, JP, my radiantly senior androgynous beautiful spirit, what do you think of radiantly senior?
Hairy beast. that's what my girlfriend calls. Oh, you lovely hairy beast.
There you go.
Anyway, Radiant. We're all radioactive. Yes, indeed.
Yes.
We're active on the radio. We are radiating. We are radiating fourth and fifth and sixth. It's you know, I was stoking up my stove in the kitchen, listening to the show, and it's like, I was thinking, yeah, this old thing that people say, you know, I'm going to grow old gracefully. No. You know where I'm going with this. No, I'm not going to grow old. That's it. I don't want to grow old, and I'm not going to. I'm getting thinner. I'm looking.
Yeah.
The older I'm getting, the better I'm appearing and looking and feeling. And so maybe I'm one of these sort of backwards living Doctor Who types, and I'll look younger when I'm 90. Maybe when I'm 980, I'll look my age.
Of course, because we're tapping into immortality anyway. When somebody has to do it, you know, if it's not us, who will? We have to model these things so that we understand that you know, fifth dimension is not duality; it's multidimensional duality, right? And there's immortality there. You know, this mortality thing. It's the pain. It's the pain of the loss, the pain of separation. It's the virus. It's the virus of the mind. It's the fear. It's planted as fear. It's the break of trust. It's the competition. It's the separation. It's the scarcity. It's to make us believe that we are so alone that we have lost all connection with anything else, and there are no resources available to us. It's the same model that we have in the global economy, right? It's that. So this is why I love this conversation about pain and joy, you know, the bridge from pain and joy, you know, and to put out there that image of the mother and the child, you know, it's very important, because we're all in the collective at the same time, and what Vanessa said is like totally there. It's like we're resisting the pain. That's what we're doing. We're resisting the pain. Once you let the pain be, okay, yes, you did. You did inflict pain. It was awful. You know, so we acknowledge. First step, we acknowledge the truth. Yes, it was awful. It was done to me, and it was awful. And it shouldn't have been done to me. you know, but the pain is here and I cannot carry the pain anymore in my life. You get to a point that we all do, you know, that there's so many things that it's like we were talking about this the other day. You know, I see it as the you know, humanity, as the cocoon, like the caterpillars right there, you know, in the bridge, you know, in the canal, you know, of pain that Vanessa was referring to, right? And then you see the butterfly wings frozen because you can't imagine that they can actually, because you can see them, you know, and you're still there, you know, crossing the bridge and you can see them and you're stuck there because you cannot imagine that they are alive. And the life has to come from you and that pain, and with that has to come the complete decision of giving completely up being a caterpillar, which is what JP was saying, right? It's like, you know, I refuse to age. So every cell of my body is refusing to age. There's a few angels coming.
We have a lot of air in the conversation. It's fine. It's fine.
Love it. I love the silences. Because they always allow people, you know, from the other side to step in. They come and they kind of do their dance. So, you know, on another note, Eva called me this morning and she said this, and this is like so funny, you know. She says, I am so happy that, you know, that you did that thing with the, you know, with the artwork with Radiantly Senior, you know, and you guys literally dancing there. You know, and I was telling this story to Vanessa before because Eva always says that I dance, you know, and again, it's not even my credit, it's my father's who modeled it for me before, right? So she says that I dance, you know, I dance through life, and yes, of course, that's what I do. But the funny part is that I go, darling, I cannot take any credit for the picture because it was like one move. I said to Vanessa, do you have one picture? And she says, this is all I have. And I go, oh my God, that worked. All I did was garnish it a little bit, you know. So I love that picture, Vanessa, because it inspires me so much because it's a box. It's the seniors coming out of the box of pain.
Yeah, that's a great way to
you know,
it.
To dance in joy.
Yes. Definitely depictive of what we're, you know, what we're about and who we are.
Yeah.
And our joy through our pain. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So great there, right?
Yes, I agree.
So the other thing, you know, I was thinking about seniors. You know, because I think that at some level what you said, Vanessa, and exactly what Cindy was saying before, you know, we all did this, we kind of decided who seniors we wanted to be, right? I mean, we're filling our brains with all this information. That's all it's doing. It's stretching and expanding our brain.
Yes.
You know, in a way that I am shocked with myself. You know, I'm 65 years old and I'm like the things that are in my mind and how, you know, everything and the thinking and the process and the literal channeling of the black holes from the universe to the black holes of my DNA. You know, it's really amazing and it makes life a lot easier because, you know, as our beautiful friend Donald Neil Walsh said, you know, in his conversations with God, said, what you resist persists.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and once you start to you begin to face that pain and allow yourself to really feel that pain, that within itself is the beginning and the mark of healing, as I stated earlier, and something happens. I mean, the universe responds to that. The truth of who we are recognizes that we are ready to begin the return home. And this thing called our heart chakra, it starts to open. Mm. And, you can feel somewhat of the chemical rearrangement and action really beginning. You can feel it in your body changing you.
Yes.
And
yes.
Healing you. You know, I don't know the technical name of all of these different processes that happen within our body, but you can feel it. And when it happens in your heart chakra, that is the moment where, you know, you can finally stand up to all of that and just say, you know, this is the end of that story. That's what was. You know, the past, nothing in the past will change, you know, no matter how much you look back. But, you know, I don't have to keep looking back. And I know that there is another and a higher truth for myself. And there's no way to really explain in words how to get to that place. It just sort of happens to us. You know, particularly when you make the decision to just feel that pain and start and stop stuffing it, the universe does the rest. Yes.
Okay, let me say this because it's very crucial what you just said. Right, Cindy? We've been talking about this for a long time, JP, about the inner child, right? Here's the thing with the pain. It is that minute that you decide to see the pain, which is the truth, acknowledge the pain, what you are actually doing is, okay, the pain comes from an energy. I mean, pain is energy, anger is energy, love is energy, all of it is, JP said it before, he has a very clear understanding of the electromagnetic being that we are, each of us individually. So when you have that pain, that's energy that's embattled in your body that doesn't have a place where to transmute, not a channel to transmute the pain to the joy, right? So when you acknowledge, it's the first time that your inner child will be acknowledged. Because, you know, whatever anger and violence that comes from the battled pain is going to manifest, as you said, in violence, because it's energy that's been embattled. So, you know, the reason is because that it has a life of its own. And of course, it's an electromagnetic field. So when you acknowledge it, it doesn't have to act out anymore. It's like the same thing that happens with children. You give children attention. You don't give them love. You give them attention. You give yourself the attention to say, you know, this is the truth and I acknowledge it. The beautiful thing about that is that the inner child knows. Is the only person within you that knows that nobody will feel that but you. Because that decision has to be taken by you, because basically otherwise you're going to continue to try to fill the holes with your mother, with your relationship, with your child, and create all this codependence of the child that is dissociated in the end, right?
Yes.
So this thing about, you know, about the acknowledgement is so fundamental, because we have, a society that we don't know, nobody acknowledges anything. It's, you know, it's the acknowledgement is not part of it. Purposely so, because, you know, but on the other hand, you know, the only person that you can, that the inner child is going to trust, that's acknowledging him or her, is you. It's not your couple or your, you know, how beautiful, how nice you are, whatever, you know, or your, how bad, nothing of that. You know? And I don't know, it was like, for me it was always, you know, I got, when I did my spiritual awakening, like the actual one that I met my higher self, I was like 36, and I am so happy that I got the message that of acceptance, and I understood right there that really spiritual awakening is nothing else but accepting your humanity. And how do you do it? Through the pain, to the inner child acknowledging, and now the inner child can play and come out and do what was supposed to be doing, right? Creative, psychic, and brilliant, and radiant.
Yes, indeed.
And then there's that sacred thing, you know, Cindy, and I really, you know, like you've had the experience of being a grandmother lately. I mean, there's nothing that gets me closer to myself than my grandchildren and children in general now. And, you know, there's always that joke, you're a senior and you're, it's so close with children. And children make much more sense these days to me. Right, Cindy?
Oh yeah, children make a lot of sense just because, you know, when I look at my granddaughter and I think that in so many ways she is so much more perceptive than I am, just because, she hasn't had the experience that I have to, kind of keep her gifts and talents locked up. You know, part of the pain process that we've been talking about is, you know, as we go through life and we try to express who we are, we get shut down. And, you know, because of what our society and our culture do to us, you know, we have these hoops to jump through, these roles to play, and so we kind of get cajoled into playing them, but in process, we do lose our identity. And, you know, when I look at Alora and realize that she is still young enough to be experiencing that unhindered, and I think, oh my gosh, how can I help her not have to jump through the same hoops that I did? How can I help her express who she is and leave that intact without causing more pain that is necessary? And, you know, it does kind of make me think, too, this whole process of joy coming through pain, and that the whole growth and learning process is so much more than we realize. But like I said, I really want to, in some ways I'm hoping that I can help her be and kind of do a better job than I was able to. You know, help her to keep herself unlimited, I guess is my point.
Amen to that.
Mm-hmm.
It's the trust that's broken when we come. That's how they control us. That's how they plant this, the fear, is the trust. So if you break they break your connection to divinity, and they break the connection to your parents at some level, because we have to accept, you know, bringing children into this world, it's a major thing. And actually, I mean, you have to be willing to sacrifice your children if you're honest with yourself, because we are sacrificing them at different levels all the time. You know, it's like all we can do is safeguard that and give them tools to deal with that underneath. I mean, I'm finding so many people that have been, you know, raised in ways, you know. Oh my God, this is something that's so beautiful about Alice Miller, you know. Alice Miller to me is she talks about the enlightened witnesses. And this is the part of the fear that is so important to take out, you know, to bring out and to incorporate in the consciousness. She talks about the enlightened witnesses. And she was, you know, a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a PhD in anthropology, you name it, you know. And she died in 2010, and you know, she wrote several books. Many people have read them, you know. And she literally confronted this status quo, you know, because she studied serial killers for 30 years, you know, until she concluded that violence is not genetic. Think about that. Violence is not genetic, which means that we are not violent beings. We're led to believe that we are, but we're not. So she said, you know, there's a book, one of her books that's called The Truth Will Set You Free, that she says that throughout her studies, when she found people that had the same kind of childhood that was incredibly neglected and abused and you know, by sociopath behavior, you know, and turned out to be, you know, pseudo normal human beings, because none of us is normal, but, you know, being, you know, people who could contribute to society, she said that every time there was somebody in the childhood of that person who was an enlightened witness, who actually, you know, gave him back the belief in himself. All you have to do with the child is look at himself and see him, because we talk about loving and we don't see people, right? So it's like, look at a child, you know, that can change everything. So she found that the cases that people would, you know, overcome these horrible childhoods, invariably, 100% of the time, they had somebody either in their family, a sister, you know, a friend, a neighbor, a teacher, the mailman, you know, anybody, a friend, a sister, you know, anybody who gave them back the image of themselves. Because what happens is that you're born, you know, from this amazing other side, which is pure love, into fear. And then all of a sudden, you're a painting on the wall, because whatever you say is going to be used against you, you know. So, you know, so, oh my goodness, this thing, you know, with the inner, with that is huge. So, anyway, anybody want to comment on that? And I think, JP, are we close to a break?
Well, we're about 20 minutes out. Time seems to be running quite nice and slowly the last couple of days. Have you noticed? It's like, oh, suddenly I've got some breathing space. So we better make the most of it. So you've got 20 minutes. To talk about your inner child, start.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. By the way, yes, and Eva is calling at the second half. So, yeah, so, anybody want to comment on that?
Well, I'll just say this, Luz, and just briefly. You know, in terms of the enlightened witness, and I can only speak from my own experience, to be honest with you, in terms of anything that I'm saying, but I think that is very, very, a very, very potent factor in our lives. And the Course in Miracles talks about how important that is to an individual, and that that's why most therapists who are in the field of trying to help people and heal them fail, because they are not trained and they don't get that.
They don't get it.
They don't get that that is the most important thing that they can give their client first and foremost, is the acknowledgement that they are whole and complete and not broken.
Exactly. You know?
And so now we have to just, it's not that we have to fix you, it's just that we have to get you to see the truth about yourself, okay? And then we can work on these other issues that are real issues, you know, that, you know, were made real issues. But the point is that they lack being a witness to their client. And that goes both ways, okay? Whenever there's a healer and someone who needs to be healed, you know, are together in this communion of working something out, it's never complete one without the other. It takes both to make the healing complete. And it all ends up, the ultimate healing is when both the healer or the therapist and the one who is come to receive treatment, in the end, they recognize the truth of who each other really are, you know, that is the enlightened grace of a higher creator. And none of this story, you know, is not powerful enough to erase all that. You know, it's all been a huge lie. So my point was basically, you know, this is why most therapists fail. And I think I've had the conversation with you earlier that, you know, the when you come into this world, your value is based on pretty much your contribution in this world as a laborer. You know, that's what you're trained to be. That's what you're trained to be. That's what you're raised to be. That's what your education is about. That's what your social security number is about, and all of that. And they want your life, you know, to add to their net worth up until 65 or 60, whenever they're done with you as a laborer. After that, you know, they send you home to, as far as they're concerned, die. You know, they don't really care what happens to you. Now, up until that point, they have a script for you. Okay, but when you're no longer valuable as a laborer, as far as the world concept of your value is concerned, then, you know, they're not willing to invest in you anymore. Okay, you're on your own. Yeah. And that's very painful when you realize that, you know, You feel used and abused. And that's so much a part of our pain that we really haven't come to, most people haven't even awakened to that reality, is that, you know, you are first and foremost in this world, you know, your value is based on how valuable you are as a laborer.
From the outside.
Yeah, from the outside, exactly.
So let me inject something here that's really relevant that I started telling you the other day. This is so fascinating with the image of the caterpillar and the frozen wings, right? So yes. I'm trying to help a friend who's in so much pain. She's 60 years old. And I've known her for years. I haven't seen her in 10 years. And, you know, we're reconnected. She's like in physical pain, you know, everything, like all kinds of sicknesses. But of course, I'm not surprised because she has that kind of fear inside and energy that kind of attracts that. So I'm not surprised to find this. But anyway, this one moment here, this one moment, and that's the pain. I promise you, this is where the pain comes from. This is a moment that she's like sitting and with all her pain in her face, and I'm acknowledging the pain, right? Because she has a narcissistic mother, right? So the mother never approved and accepted her, right? Ever. And it many times starts like that, you know, with that family of origin, right? So it's like, but then it's like, it's so clear that it's the switch, it's that same switch of pain to joy that happens when you see that your mother will never approve of you, never accept you the way you are. So there's no other choice but to start accepting yourself. You know, and that's the pain. The pain is that you were not accepted by the people who brought you here and approved and acknowledged as you. That's the pain. But when you realize that they don't have to, that you're the one who have to now, there's no other choice. Mm-hmm. You know? It was so amazing when I saw it. I go, oh my goodness, because I've been working on this, you know, for several things. And I'm going, that's where the pain is when you decide. And I remember with my mother when I wanted so much for her to accept me, you know, until I was like almost in my 50s, you know, or 40s. It was all around that time, you know, and until I said one day, it was like, wow, accept myself. What a concept. I don't have to pursue her acceptance anymore. No matter what I do, I've been trying, you know. I really tried for years. You know, I tried several. I thought I could do it. Well, you know, that's the other thing. Sometimes you have to say, you know, well, I'm hopeless to do this. You know, I have to find another way. It doesn't work, right?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely.
And the other part is the ancestors that are coming through, that we're opening the channels to them because they are the ones who have the keys to everything.
Yeah, true. Very true.
So we need to pass the torch.
Agreed.
And then the other part that's like so horrible when you have this idea, oh, senior, you know, a mobile home, Florida, you know, and medicine, you know, a lot of pharma, right? Mm-hmm. That you cannot afford. That's kind of the idea that comes to my mind when I hear senior. What does it come to my mind? You know, what does it say to me, right? It's that thing. And as you said, it's conscribed to a very, the message, you know, it always gave me so much pain in my pancreas, the way they talked about the veterans, you know, when they really didn't take care of the veterans. So, you know, it's like, oh, support the veterans, and the veterans don't have anywhere to go. You know, it's the same thing with the seniors. It's what you said. We are merchandise lost at sea. That's what we are.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to accept that because it's painful that somebody did that to our beautiful, you know, spiritual, electromagnetic, and biological bodies, right? But they did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we survived somehow, and resisting is not going to take it away ever. It's hard to, that's a very hard, in any case, this whole thing is a very hard discussion for some people because many people say, it's hard for them to understand, and this is a lot of New Age people, and we've talked about this with Cindy. They feel like they cannot do they have to do the good part and not the bad part, you know, kind of thing. So the pain is kind of suppressed. So, you know, and when it's suppressed, it really is suppressed in the entire collective. You know, it's like we are electromagnetic. Every thought counts. It's huge.
Yes. Well, I think that's why, you know, in Radiantly Senior, the project itself, you know, all of these women have taken the bold step of you know, the awakening path, and rewriting their scripts for their years of, you know, this next level of their life, which we call years of seniority. We dare not use the term senior citizens in our book. You know, we really want to kick that out to the wolves and, you know, get rid of that, because it just has a bad connotation to it, a very disempowering connotation to it. Like you said, you know, you think of the pharma stuff. I mean, you think of all of this negative stuff. And these women, and there are men, you know, our book just happens to be with women. These women have taken their lives into their own hands for this part of their life. They're healthy. Okay. They're taking care of themselves. All right. They are, keeping themselves surrounded by primarily positive, energizing, healthy people. They consciously make it an intention, not to stay around negativity when it shows up in their lives. Now they know how to walk away from it now, and they do that, as opposed to when, you know, we were growing up, all this negative stuff was around us. You know, we were living in our mother's homes or whoever our caretakers were. And, you know, we had to just stay there and deal with it. There's no way to run, nowhere to hide. Now they have taken an empowering stance. And let me go back a little bit. It's that way also, it has been that way also in their previous careers, where when all the negativity showed up, still there, even if they were the boss, you know, there was nowhere to run and hide from all the negativity in that environment. And they're just saying, you know, I'm not going to end my story like this. I'm going to be, you know, the writer. I decide how this ends and pretty much how long it ends. And I like the thing that, you know, Jay said about, you know, he's not going to get old. He's not going to age. I absolutely agree with that. You know, it's not something that, has to happen the way that it's been demonstrated for it to happen. These women are not paying attention to those numbers, okay? They're paying attention to keeping around in their lives whatever it is that empowers them, makes them happy, eating well, feeling well, you know, doing exercises, but also taking on a life that's feels purposeful to them. Their work now is more of service. Now, they are still making money. They're still financially well off, but their scope and their focus is different now. They want to make the world a better place in their process of becoming, you know, even more prosperous themselves. So that is the difference in terms of what you're going to see, you know, in the end with these women and other people who are taking this road, as opposed to the picture that, you know, they flash before us in newspaper ads and TV and, you know, all these other images of what aging what aging means in terms of our culture.
Exactly. Wow.
So this is kind of like a science project in a lot of ways, because the results are really yet to be seen. You know, like I said, this is a movement. It's going to be interesting to watch what happens to these women as they do go further down the road, you know, with this intention. You know, how will it and what will life be like for them when they're 90? You know, we're actually, I won't call her name. We're trying to get a woman who is 78 years old now. She lives in my area, and she's the world champion for bodybuilding in her class. We're trying to get her on board with our book, Radiantly Senior. It's kind of challenging because, you know, she has a lot of publicity. She's very well known. If I said her name, I'm sure you would know her. But I won't say that right now because we haven't gotten her on board, and I do not want to, you know, invade her privacy or anything. But this woman is amazing. I mean, she has the figure of, she would put a 35-year-old to shame any day. I mean, a 35-year-old who's in good shape. Okay. And that's not all, about lifting, pumping iron and all. And you know, that's, you know, a great deal of it. I mean, most of it is, but that's a mindset of intention that,
yes,
no, I'm not going down that status quo road. Okay. And while most women, and she didn't start weightlifting until she was 57, okay, and she was overweight, and she is gorgeous, but you know, so most of our women have not, you know, that's just an, I won't say it's extreme, but it's, you know, it's definitely not the course that most of the women in our book have taken, you know, but they have taken courses that are just as extreme, you know, in other directions and other paths and whatnot. And just because they're not bodybuilders doesn't mean, I mean, their lives won't be any less healthier or any shorter, yeah, you know, hopefully. But I'm just saying, you know, there are people who are getting this, who are saying, that's not how I want it to end for me. It doesn't have to end that way. You know, there's something higher. There's
Because Please. We are creators.
Exactly.
We are the creators. So we are the creators, and we need to own and acknowledge that we are the creators.
Exactly. Right? That's exactly.
And then I think we have to go to break, but let's go to break on that. Right, Vanessa, the creators.
Sure.
Owning the creators.
Absolutely.
JP?
Welcome back.
Hello, everybody on my beautiful soul partners on both sides of the sun. This is Luz Aguirre-Beña at World Spirit Radio, broadcasting from Scotland. And we're here with Vanessa Wells and Cindy C.P. Evans and, of course, J.P., and we're talking about Radiantly Senior. And I wanted to remind our listeners to, you know, to become a member of World Spirit Radio if you want all this content that we're producing at World Spirit Radio. And the membership is $5 per month. So it's, you know, it's an access to all this amazing content that's being produced every day by every single host at World Spirit Radio. So welcome back, everybody. So, Cindy.
Yes.
We were, you know... I wanted to share one story, you know, I was thinking about while we were at the break, and I think we've talked about this, and it really portrays a lot, right? It turns out that, you know, my father's two youngest children's mother. You know, I met her when she was 70, and her son was the only child. And you know, she talked, when I met her, she talked about this event of her delivering a child as if it was yesterday. And she talked how painful it was. And she didn't like it at all, and that's why she only had a child, only one child.
We got you back. I'm sorry about that.
No problem. Are you there, Cindy?
I am. Can you hear me?
Great. So, you know, so Vanessa, it's amazing talking about the pain, right? So she's like completely stationary in this painting that feels like she had it when, you know, 3 months ago. She's still in the pain. She could never see the joy of having a child. Then, of course, she went and she... You know, she put the child at 6 in a boarding school, in a Jesuit boarding school. You know? And then the person who was the most prominent in his childhood was his grandmother, who was literally the enlightened witness, you know, that took over and kind of like, you know, helped in the process. But when you think about it, you know, this poor woman, I mean, she was completely stuck in the pain. She never saw it. I mean, here she is. She has a grown man in front of her that came out of the pain, and she's not seeing him. And she's saying that he was so ugly, and she didn't like him, and kind of jokingly, you know, but... And I was, you know, I'm listening to this conversation, and today actually it's the first time that I am able in my psychic to bring it back and go, can you imagine, you know, now I understand, right? That makes a lot of sense of who he is. Right? Because he models. The modeling is that there's never joy after pain, and he's part of it, so he's not even there. Yeah. Can you imagine?
Well, I think we have a lot of... societal perceptions to work around. I mean, just this play-by-play rule book that we're supposed to follow, and it's really easy to get sucked up and make those perceptions our own. And so you know, people joke around about it, and yet they really do see things. They really do see things from that perspective. So, you know, just to kind of resolve the chaos that creates with the person that they really are, as opposed to the person they are in society. They kind of joke around about it, but you know that there's a lot of unresolved conflict and issue in that. You still there? Hello?
Luz, are you muted?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, oh, I was talking and I was muted. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, the thing is that, you know, with the abuse and the abused, you know, the child that's abused, you know, is put in a corner, and when you're abused, basically what happens is that it's almost like your entire life becomes the attention of the abuser, because you can't believe. You can't believe. So you keep trying. You can't believe that they are not acknowledging you. So you keep trying. And then the approval of the outside world becomes magnified compared to the approval of yourself, which is the one we need, and the only one that's really valid. You know? Vanessa, near your town, in Baltimore, I did a seminar with, I was part of the Dan Kennedy Circle, you know, the marketer. This mm-hmm. is like the best marketer in the world, honestly, this guy's a genius. He was the one who created direct marketing. He was the creator of direct marketing, right? And the direct marketing TV and whatever. In terms of the different conversation with the audience, I remember this is the thing that I love the most. You know, he goes on the stage, and the first thing he says is, okay, if any of you here don't have one person who believes in you completely, get the hell out of here and go get that person, because I cannot help you otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that.
Mm.
He's right on.
Mm-hmm.
Evita is here, by the way. She came right at the right time. Okay, Evita, are you there? She's connecting. Anyway, think about that. I thought it was brilliant, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a thing that, you know, about the biology of belief, that your cellular, your biological body has to believe it. You know, you can tell, you know, if you don't mean it, it doesn't mean anything. That's the marketing of the 21st century.
Yes.
That's the beauty of it, of the internet. If you don't mean it, it doesn't mean anything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Mm.
So, you know, this whole thing about the child, you know, it's like going back to the place where, you know, where you still had connection to divinity, you know, and where you still, your right brain was operating. And you know that it's the statistics are amazing. The right brain, which is the one that carries the inner child and the creativity and the psychic abilities, you know, is, we're born with 100% of it. By the time we're in second grade, at 7 years old, we have only 21% left. And by the time we're 21 years old, we only have 8% left. If everything goes at, you know, good with the grid. You know, of course, there are loopholes that we are the ones, the radiant seniors and bodies, you know, that are modeling something different. But that's the statistic. You know,
yeah.
8% of your right brain gone completely. It's like 90% of your junk DNA doesn't exist. It's junk. I would like to be in the room with the people who made that decision, be a fly on the wall. Oh, we're going to decide that 90% of this people's DNA is junk. Wow. Well, we're playing with the junk here, guys.
Yeah. Well, the scripts, you know, the scripts that were laid out for us when we came into this world are pretty much, you know, left brain geared, you know, scripts. And we live in a very left brain world. Fortunately, we do have these people in our world called artists that has been their work to keep us a little more in balance. thank God to artists. Otherwise, we wouldn't even know what a right brain, a right brain is. And I think I was probably one of those ones who was called to kind of help balance the equation, or at least keep the reality as an equation without the deference of the right brain, because I was an artist myself. I was a musician and was very talented from a child. So I had music lessons all my, most of my life. And when I went to college, that was the time that I was supposed to get practical and choose a curriculum that would, of course, have employment waiting for me when I graduated. And I opted not to do that. I totally chose my major based on impressionable reasons, you know, what was juicing me up, what had always juiced me up. Anyway, I was a music major. And I realized that, once I graduated from college, it actually did make it tough for me to not just find a job, and I did find a job. Of course, you know, I did, maybe not necessarily in my major. I did teach for a while, and then I got out of it. But what was even more challenging was relating to those who didn't follow their hearts and did go the way of, you know, choosing, those careers that they were educated to go into or to choose. And actually all throughout my life, that has been a challenge for me. Because I kept my right brain functioning very highly for a very long portion of my life until this day. Even though I went into the legal field, okay? Even though I went into the legal field and excelled, still, everyone always knew there was something different about me, you know. So I just want to say, you know, thank God for the artists on this planet who has kept our reality in somewhat of an equation format, so that, you know, as we did start to wake up, we can really get those hemispheres, balanced back into the proper balance and order. I think that's happening a lot right now.
Hello?
Luz.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm sorry. Because I lost Vanessa for a little while there, and we have Eva on the line too. Yeah, Vanessa, that's such a great story. Because, you know, that whole college, journey, it's been a joke in the last 30 years. I mean, in so many different ways. As you said before, they were training us to be admins, to administer, you know, to manage the merchandise lost at sea.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, so it's been a fascinating experience, you know, and it's really profound to see it so clearly because, you know, many people get stuck in it and they don't see it. You know, they lose touch with the clarity.
Right.
Yeah. So, Evita. Hello. Eva, are you there? Eva Moore is on the call. What happened?
She should be here. Eva, are you muted? What's up?
It looks like she's here.
She's here, but somehow not.
And I think we lost
it. Maybe there's a weird mute button on it. So why don't you continue with Vanessa?
Yeah, we'll continue.
Eva can leap in when we can hear her.
Perfect. There we go.
Ah!
Hey!
Hey!
takes me a little bit on this phone. It's very slow. So I apologize. I seem to have a bit of difficulty with Skype on it. But thank you for having me. And hi, Vanessa.
Hello. How are you?
This is very exciting, and I'm grateful to be a part of this. And I know that Luz has been working very diligently on many things, and I think that this show, of all the shows, really does justice to... I mean, it's easy to not consider Luz a senior because she's so on top of so many things and so busy and so plugged in to the millennial generation. To have her take the time to acknowledge that she is a radiant senior, it's like, oh, yes, you are. So it's,
absolutely.
It's definitely. Yeah. Yeah. It's even hard to sometimes, you know, acknowledge that because she is so multifaceted and involved in so many people's lives in such an enthusiastic way. And she touches so many people. So it's really an honor to be here. And thank you for this work that you're doing, Vanessa.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Ava. It's really, really, my heart song, and I hope that we change a lot of lives and change a lot of stereotypes for people who are entering that stage of their lives. Thank you for saying that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can just say that Luz really stepped up and came into my life at a time where there was a lot of pain and sadness, and I'm so grateful because she saw me, you know, before I even understood how or why. And over the last 2 years, she's taken the time to, as it was, you know, appropriate, to kind of give me morsels and tidbits of her life journey. And, oh, what a blessing to have found her and to be here on this call today.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, Vanessa was talking about something before, you know, between the therapist and the, which is the most obsolete and stupid, I agree 100% with what she said. And I always believe, and we've been talking about this with you, Eva, in terms of the difference of discipline and disciples, you know, which one is authority and the other one is mentorship. And all we can do is model, because human beings learn from modeling, not from, you know, from lectures. So, you know, the beautiful part about that is that there's always an exchange of gifts, you know, and I say the same thing. I'm so grateful to have you in my life, and, you know, because you're like, in so many ways, you're so me. And it's like, when I see you, I see me at your age in so many ways, and I see the radiant authenticity and passionate honesty, you know. That's like, oh my God, thank God I wasn't the only crazy one kind of thing, in a way, in a beautiful way, because it's like so loud. And people are not that loud with their feelings. This is what we were talking about before, right, Vanessa? And where is Cindy, by the way? She's gone. Anyway, it looks like Cindy left.
Yeah, Cindy had to go and collect her granddaughter, so she's...
No, there. Oh, perfect. I'm sorry, I wasn't... Yeah, but no problem. So, anyway, it's been an amazing journey, and it's beautiful because... You know, it's like planting the seeds and planting the seeds again, you know. It's kind of revaluing everything and just dancing, you know. Here's the part that I was going to tell you before about the dancing, and I think I told you, Vanessa, already about the dancing, but, you know, Eva always says that I dance, you know, so that she loved the idea that the logo had the dancing part because it's so important.
Yes. Well, that was what I was saying, is that Luz takes on so much, but she makes it all look so easy because she dances through everything that she touches. She approaches all of these groups and people and networks and, you know, different projects with the spirit of a dance. And some have, you know, a quick, slow. Some are more, you know, a leisurely strut, and some are faster paced. But no matter what it is, she's always dancing. So she always makes it look really easy. And when I saw the logo, I was like, oh, this is beautiful. I love that there's all these different colors and all these different body expressions, and it's fluid like a dance. I thought that was so perfect. That was a great, yeah, great image.
Well, thank you for complimenting.
Yeah, and Vanessa, the story behind it is that my son, you know, and this is a very interesting story that it's very relevant to everything that's happening. You know, my oldest son, he works for Cheesecake Factory, and he started at 23. And I was thinking about this thing with Cheesecake Factory. You know, he started at 23, and now he's going international, and he's, you know, the guy whose cheesecake sent to Mexico to open the first cheesecake factory in Mexico. And the thing with the Cheesecake Factory throughout the years, the last years with the millennial and even the Generation Y, is that there were like two companies in the United States that were kind of sustaining the millennial generation, you know, through the workforce, where they could make a little more money and at the same time kind of like go to college and pursue whatever they were doing. It was kind of the platform that helped them. That's why they have like a 2-year turnover in the past. Now it's faster, but you know what I mean? Because it's kids in transition to college, you know, or whatever, or they're entrepreneur, you know, whatever it is, dream. So it was interesting because this is what happens, is that my son is ready to go to Mexico, and of course it turns out that my youngest son works in Cheesecake in San Francisco, and his girlfriend worked in Cheesecake too in San Francisco. So my son is preparing himself to go to Mexico, so they sent him to San Francisco because he was the GM of Walnut Creek, sent him to San Francisco for one day, you know. And then, you know, finally my son's girlfriend comes to me and says, oh my God, I finally met Paul's brother, your son Max. And I said, oh really? He said, and I go, tell me how that was, you know. And she goes, well, you know, let me tell you this, and I have to tell you this. But it turns out that we are in a station with another guy, you know, and he approaches us, and he's actually singing a song and dancing it. <You know>? And I'm going, really? He says, really? And I could not believe it, because then I remembered that I fell in love with Paul because he was dancing all the time. And then I meet Alex, and he's dancing, and I meet you, and you're dancing.
Yeah.
And then I go, oh my God, it's not even me, it's my father, the radiant senior and radiant man, dancing life around me, modeling, dancing. So, you know, thank you, Dad, Pedro, Padre, Piedra, for giving me that dancing thing, because it was passed from you to me, man. You know, and that's the beauty, and that's the thing about the ancestors, is that when you go, oh my goodness, you know, it's like my son comes to me and goes, you know, the last night before he leaves, where, you know, he had like 300 employees with him, you know, like literally crying because he was leaving. And he had like, I don't know how many shots of tequila, and he comes with his eyes very red, you know, and completely drunk. And he says, Mom, I'm so humbled tonight. So humbled. I don't know what to do with this. Like every single person came to me. Of course, everyone wanted to have a shot of tequila with them, you know, to say, oh my God, you changed my life. Oh my God, you were my mentor. I would not, you know, be the person I am without your model, you know. I mean, it was so amazing. He was overwhelmed, you know, almost at the point that he was almost crying. And he says, and you know what, Mom? Every single word that I received tonight comes from you. And I go, thank you, Max. And then I go immediately and go, actually, it's not even me. It's my father modeling that for me. You see, modeling the mentorship, modeling the modeling the soul conversation. You know, because I had this kind of conversation with my father since I was born. You know, he was waiting for me to have them, you know, when I was born.
Vanessa.
Yes.
I have a question for Vanessa. Okay, so I'm 36, 37. I forget now. It's been a blur of a year. I guess I'm 37. And talking about ancestors, this is one thing that Luz and I probably share in common, which is why she sees a lot of herself in me. My father, you know, was at times very much Zorba the Greek, and she always says that her father had very much a Zorba the Greek flavor to him, but he was also involved with the judicial and legal system. And I just came in as you were talking about being a lawyer, and I didn't know that. But when I was reviewing the podcast that Luz had sent me of a previous show the two of you guys had done, my first impetus after hearing the conversation, of course, this context is around seniors and, you know, having friends or family members pass and the sadness of pain and the joy that comes out of that is in equal proportion. But I thought, you know, that would be a great template around the, you know, state of the country, the judicial, and the prison industry. And that's something that is very much, you know, in reform as a hot topic right now within the United States. But one of the things that I would love to hear from you, Vanessa, is I didn't hear how old you are, but from your perspective now, based on how old you were when you went into getting your bar certification and becoming a lawyer, how has your perspective on the judicial system, and because there can be a lot of pain that comes out of, you know, any kind of court proceeding, but at the same time, whatever that is, there's always equal and opposite growth. But in the state of the country, and you're as an elder who's, you know, got the wisdom through the years, I would love to hear your thoughts, if you don't mind, on the judicial system right now and how the same template of pain versus joy of growth, like for yourself, in this experience, because I think it's a macro conversation. It's off topic, but I think because you are talking about seniors, I think one of the most important thing that needs to be captured is the wisdom that seniors possess in their experience, in their experiential marketing. If you could share that, as my father was very much, and he's passed now, but he was very passionate about the spoken word and about justness and bringing structure to a system. So.
Okay, so let me just say, and I can't answer your question, but let me just say that I was not a lawyer. I was a lawyer's assistant, and I was in and out of court for years. So I was very, very, still very, very, very close and intimately involved with that judicial system that you're speaking about, and can comment on it. And to answer your question, I am 58, okay? Now, do you want me to continue with answering your question? Because I just want to clarify that I was not a lawyer.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because I think then you're probably doing a lot of the groundwork where you're you know, much more in the foundational engagement where you prep and research and, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we had a joke and as legal assistants, litigation legal assistants, and particularly in our area of property, which is a hot thing now, is that, you know, we did all the work and they made all the money. And we knew law better than they did. But, you know, no, it was, that was just a bad joke. We had a lot of, good times and a lot of fun there. And, but the legal system really, baffled me, for all the 30 years that I worked in it. And I think I heard the gist of what you asked. There was some breaking up when you were, you know, going through your questions. But I think I got the gist of it. It has always been an imperfect system, okay? And it really is not always about, as I think most people realize by now, about who, you know, finding out the truth. In terms of who wins and doesn't win, it really is about this war in the courtroom as to who can be, who's the better lawyer in this particular battle that's going to manipulate all of this information, all this coded information, volumes and volumes and volumes of information. Who's going to be the best gladiator to manipulate that information and convince a jury or a judge that based on law, you know, their client is, you know, is innocent or guilty. You know, it really has nothing to, very little to do with the facts in a lot of cases, which is why, you know, we've seen murderers get off on technicalities, all right? It is still, I mean, and as it evolved, I don't see where it really got a lot better. There were lawyers who were sincere in heart and wanted to definite, who wanted and fought for the truth. There are those lawyers out there, but in the end, there's a lot of, you know, there's still that game of politics going on. The legal system is extremely political, and you know, there's a lot of palm greasing in anything political. And unfortunately, it has tainted the political system more and more. And I feel that it has been such a burden on our society economically. The money I've seen spent in litigation, in terms of, okay, so what do you, let's define what, you know, allegation really means here. You know, what does it mean? You know, the amount of money spent in litigation, because no one can interpret what allegation really means. You're fighting over what that means in this particular context. It's just unheard of. So it's kind of like we can't live with out it, and unfortunately have to live with it. I'm going to stop right there and just see where, you know, does that answer any of your question?
Yeah, I think, and also I'd love to hear, with so much change right now with technology, how do you see the legal system shifting with the technocratic age? Do you see
I see that being
technology taking a bigger
I actually see that being a good thing in a lot of areas. Particularly, technology covers the scope of everything now, from, you know, from, you know, our medical field, certainly intellectual property, you know, any kind of law, even estate law. I mean, technology can really save the day, you know, for example, one that's kind of broad scope for everybody, like, you know, the technology of DNA samples that has released so many people out of jail because a DNA, you know, the DNA sample proved that they were innocent, or it wasn't their blood at the scene. You know, this is all technology that is working, you know, in a positive way as far as the law is concerned. At the same time, it, you know, anything can be manipulated in law. But I'm going to just, you know, say this shortly, in a short way, without going into a lot of detail about this, because, you know, this, we're talking about pain here, relating all of this to pain, and there's a great deal of pain that has been suffered, you know, through the gates of our legal system, a great, great deal. It's really up to us. You have technology, and technology is just technology. We are the users of it. We are the manipulators of it. It does and performs as we command it to. So it really depends on us as users of this technology, if we're going to use it to improve the legal system or if we're not. It certainly has the potential to make a huge difference in the legal system in terms of making it better, bringing more structure, you know, really letting the truth be the final say-so in the courtroom. It has all of that potential. But it's really hard to say whether it will be used in that way, because we're the ones who have the ultimate command, you know, for that to occur or not occur.
Yeah. I think in many ways, I'm having a perception. I think we lost Ava for a minute, but I'm having the perception about the legal system. You know, I was in Spain for 17 years, and the last 7 years of Franco's death. So I was pretty much like 10 years prior and then 7 years after Franco died. We're talking about a dictatorship, totally centralized, patriarchal, with the Catholic Church and the and the archons on top. I have the same feeling in the legal system in the United States today after being, you know, in the system through my kids. Actually, I had, you know, situations with my kids. I mean, it's difficult not to, with the war on drugs that they did and the prisons for profit they established in the last 20 years, you know. So this it's something that's so close to my heart because I went through that. But what I'm seeing is that the difference was happening, it's happening something similar to what happened in Spain, which is that, first of all, it's grown bigger than they. They have channeled so much stuff, so many people, so much that they don't have probation officers anymore. They don't know how to. And basically, it's a machine. You have to think of it as numbers. You cannot think of it only as in slavery. You have to think that they are numbers. I mean, the for-profit system gives. I mean, the contractors in the middle are making so much money. It's ridiculous. You know, we're talking about $69,000 per person in the system, that everybody's taking a piece of the pie, you know, and we are like left with 90% of well, you know the numbers, 25% of the world population in jail. I mean, that's not normal, you know, period. Mm. You know, this is not normal. This is the Roman Empire all over again. Sorry, you know. So what I'm seeing is that it's like it's collapsing. I think that it is really collapsing because it boils down to, you know, with the scare tactics with probation officers and this and that in general, what I'm seeing is that the bottom line is how much the person has to pay while they are in the probation process. That's what really matters. And they take $2,000 extra out of you every time you're on probation. That's what really matters in the end. Mm-hmm. And if you compare it with the system, I was in the system in D.C., you know, most of my friends were lawyers, and compare the system in L.A. years after, like in 3 or 4 years ago, they are collapsing. They don't know what they are doing. Nobody can. So it's fascinating because it's kind of like that thing where, you know, the laws are changing, but they are not really being enforced by the people because there is like a gray area that they don't know where to go yet. And they have to follow their conscience at some level.
Mm-hmm.
Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, you know, with the technology, getting back to Ava's question, it's such a volatile thing. It has the potential to improve everything, but you know,
exactly.
I mean, we're using it so much to continue on with our these old minds, you know, these old paradigm minds that have been ruling our world. We're using it to continue that kind of thinking and that kind of destruction and harm to humanity. And we're still trying to balance the equation. Technology is very much a part of that. And there are some fields where it is by far improving our lives. No doubt about that. And I can say that in spite of the downsides of our allopathic, you know, medical field with all the pharmacology and all that, technology has definitely played a huge part in helping a lot of people. In spite of the downsides there, but it's still a very the legal system in America. Like I said, you can't live with it, and you can't live without it. It's still in a very abusive institution. It really is.
Yeah,
it is. I can't. You know, I have to just say that. You know, I'm trying to be open minded about it and to see both sides of the story. But honestly, after being 30 years in that field, working very closely, you know, with judges, lawyers, you know, in the court system, it's very abusive.
Yes.
You know, the best man does not always, rarely wins.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's just the way it is. So.
And there's something there that's really important, you know, regarding that process is that, the abuses, I forgot what. Oh, I think I lost it. It was something about the part of the. I lost it. I'm sorry. That's okay. It will come. But anyway, it's changing inside out in many ways, I think.
It is. Yeah. I mean, and it's so much of it is yet to be seen. Okay? I mean, really it is. I mean, now we're in like, we're kind of like, as far as technology is concerned, we're kind of now, we just kind of went into warp speed. Okay? And there is, none of us know where it's going. You know, it's kind of like to be seen. We don't really know how man is going to take his consciousness and use it in the long run.
Yeah. I think in so many ways, technology is kind of like giving us the, you know, the preamble for telepathy.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm seeing it more and more, telepathy. I don't have to have a conversation with somebody these days to think of them and they call me or we are connected. It's like so clear more and more. So what happens is that everything becomes a lot easier because
mm-hmm.
we're not dealing in linear time at some level. You know, we're jumping into 4D, four dimension, kind of like in the middle of the two. Right?
Yeah.
So, the technology, it plays a huge factor here, and it's the thing, is the idea that we need to acknowledge the biological body, the spiritual body, and the electromagnetic body, which is the one you were talking about, the heart chakra. Right, the one that connects. And it really comes from that place where you decide that you're going to accept yourself, you know, and your humanity and this journey. And, you know, Einstein said it so well, and I honestly had it I had that sign on my wall for 10 years, and it said, knowledge is only experience, you know, until I got it second skin to me, because that's the knowledge. That's the only knowledge. It's experience. It's not a lecture or a compilation of data dissected, you know, from one person. It's experience. So, yeah, definitely. And that place that, you know, where you were in the system makes you see another part of the equation pretty clearly, you know, in a way that's even much more much more magnified than the view that would be the one of a lawyer, because the lawyer is conditioned to that elite thing that they cannot get out. It's difficult for them to get out.
Oh yeah,
you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So Vanessa, we want to talk a little bit. We have a little more time, like 8 more minutes. You want to talk about Radiantly Senior and how we are inviting people and so forth, and touch again on what I said in the beginning?
Sure, we can do that. In closing, I'd just like to let everyone know that the Radiantly Senior Project is ongoing. At this time, we have a few more slots available for co-authors. If the concept has radiated with you and you would like to talk with us about becoming a co-author and share your story, we would love to talk with you about that. And you can go to Facebook and request to join our Facebook page. It is Radiantly Seniors Authors. Radiantly Senior Authors. I think I said senior with an S the first time. There's no S. Authors. And go there and request to join the page. And that's one way of getting in touch with us. The other way is you can contact us directly via email at radiantlysenior@yahoo.com. And that's it. That's pretty much it. We'd love to hear from you.
One little thing that it's like the contribution for the co-authors is 1,800 words, right?
1,800 word essay. Okay. Yes, somewhere between there.
We have a deadline for that.
I'm sorry?
We have a deadline for the... Yes.
Okay, so there are deadlines. Submission of the essay is, I think that date is around November 28th. I don't have it right here in front of me, but that's...
I know it is.
That's right? Okay, November 28th.
It's the day my first one was born.
Okay, I'm sorry, I didn't hear you, Luz.
Yeah, so November 28th, right?
Yes, November 28th is the our due date for submitting our essays to the publisher. So if you like to, again, like I said, be a part of the group or inquire about it and talk to us, please contact us at radiantlysenior@yahoo.com or go to Facebook to Radiantly Senior Authors and request to join that page.
Yes. And please tell everybody that you think is Radiantly Senior to join Radiantly Senior. You know, first the book, but then the movement and the attitude and the style life and the concept.
Yes, it's going to be a great book. I mean, some of the stories I've already read, some of the authors have finished, and the stories are amazing. And they're very excited about, most of them are not published authors, so they're excited about being able to say now, you know, once the book is published, that they're a published author and add that to their credentials. But, yes, the stories are incredible. It's going to be a fabulous, amazing book and journey of these 45 women or so. So, yeah, please join us if you'd like.
Okay.
Hey.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you, Luz. Thank you so much for having me today.
This was great. So we're going to have the recording pretty soon. I'm going to put it in Podomatic for people to listen to. And we'll send it to more of our friends to join.
Okay. Sounds wonderful.
Thank you so much. JP?
Thank
you so much, JP. I love you so much.
God bless you. Thank you very much, Vanessa. Very lovely.
Bye, darling.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Vanessa.